Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 19th of Cheshvan. Today we get to see a shoot of Binyan Sion Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, there's him and Rav Yosef Shaul Nutanzon, who I find often have tshuvot that I find hard for myself to be able to convey. So when I can find an opportunity to convey one of their tshuvot, because it's written in a way that I find more easily summarized and presented, I'm always very excited. So for the 19th of Cheshvan, Tuf Reish Chav Zayin, 1866, Shut Binyan Sion Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, Siman Samach Bet, chapter 62, discussed the very interesting of question of, let's say I think something is permissible. So, you know, in my house, we eat, pork, which obviously would not be acceptable. Let's say I've come to understand that pork is mutter. Then I know, okay, pork's not going to be an example. Let's say I think that X hashkacha, let's make up hashkacha. We're going to call this hashkacha the laptop K. Right? It's got a tay within a laptop. And I think laptop K is a perfectly fine hashkacha, so I eat meat that is certified by laptop K. I hope there's really not a hashkacha called laptop K. I don't think there is. But and I must have thought of it because there is a tablet K, and I'm not commenting on tablet K at all, but tablet laptop. Anyway, so laptop K I think is permissible, and I have food in my house, and I eat meat from laptop K, and now I have a friend coming over who I know doesn't eat laptop K meat. So the truth is, that's a complicated question, because then the question would be, do I have to kash my dishes for him as well? But let's leave that aside. The question was, am I allowed to feed him that food without letting him know? And he's not going to be aware of it at all. So it'll never come up, right? So a better example would be, let's say there's some kind of a spice or some kind of a mayonnaise, let's say, that some people think is okay, some people think is not. Can I do that? Or can I put, you know, a quinoa on Pesach that he thinks might be a problem? He's not going to notice that it's quinoa. All these kinds of questions. One person thinks it's permissible. One person thinks it's prohibited. Can the person who is confident it's permissible? So from that person's perspective, he's not violent. Meaning, in some sense, there's food that's objectively kosher and not kosher. So if I think this is kosher, then when I feed it to so-and-so, I think I'm doing nothing wrong. I think I'm giving him kosher food. And the fact that he thinks it's non-kosher, I can imagine thinking to myself, but he's crazy. So I'm not really hurting him. And if he doesn't know, it's not going to hurt him. And Hashem's not going to be having to hold it against him because I think it's kosher. So as far as I know, that means I think Hashem thinks it's kosher. So that's part of the question. So, the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, says that he's seen different opinions about this in the Rishonim, and he hasn't seen a firm answer in the poskim. So there's an Or Zarua who writes, Pshita li Adam Asar Atzmo B'davar HaMutar, right? So one issue is, we weren't talking about this until now. New idea is, let's suppose, not that my friend thinks that something is usher, but my friend has decided that he's not going to partake of something. He's decided to treat it like it's usher. So the truth is, today, you know, let's imagine for a second, today there's a whole question about whether wheat, you know, and flour after, you know, sometime around, maybe around the fall, is allowed to be used without being sure that it's yashan. So let's suppose that we're all poskim agree. These are bad examples, I'm sorry, they're just the ones that are coming to my mind. Let's suppose that all poskim agreed that we're allowed to eat what we call chadash. It's not really chadash, it was really chadash, then, right? What non-yashan. All the halachic authorities decided you can eat non-yashan outside of Israel because whatever the reasons are that they decide you can eat it. But one person says, yeah, okay, maybe. But the truth is that I would prefer to be machmir. I prefer to be stringent with myself. And I don't want to eat that. I want to only eat yashan. Right, so that's not a terrible example, right? It would be a simple example of, but this is not a food example. But let's say, you know, there's an Eruv that everybody thinks is okay to carry with, and one person decides not going to carry with. That's called Dvarim HaMutarim, things that are permissible, but he is Nohig Ba'atzmo Isur. He, for himself, for his own reasons, has decided to treat it like it's Usur. And I know that he's decided to treat it like it's Usur, even though he knows that it's permissible, he's just, right, so my examples aren't the best examples because he's decided he's not going to do it. A better example would be, let's say, he decided that he drinks too much wine for a while, and therefore he's decided, or not wine, but let's say vodka. So he's decided he's not going to have any vodka, even though vodka is worth it to everybody, then he's just decided he's going to treat it like an usher. So the Ozarua says that that person who has decided to treat something like it's usher is allowed to rely on others. He doesn't have to worry. As long as everybody knows his practice and his way of acting, he doesn't have to be very careful. He doesn't have to walk around making sure that nobody feeds him the things that are prohibited, because you're allowed to trust fellow Jews, and fellow Jews are not going to try to trip each other up. And if I know that so-and-so has decided to treat something as usher, I'm not going to then make him, I'm going to trick him into eating it. So we would hope that's true. He points out, for example, we don't know of any halacha that says if somebody's a nazir, so a nazir is not allowed to have any grape products whatsoever. If somebody is a nazir, he can go to a fellow Jew's house, and as long as the Jew knows that he's a Nazir, he doesn't have to worry that the Jew's going to slip in grape juice into the, into the chillant or something like that. He doesn't have to worry about that. Same thing. A regular Jew, is allowed to go to a Kohen's house, and he's allowed to eat in the house of a Kohen. He doesn't have to worry that the Kohen's going to slip him some truma, right? Some tithe produce that an ordinary Jew is not allowed to eat. So we don't have this worry that Jews purposely trip up fellow Jews in terms of their eating. So that's clear to the Ozarua. So if it's a matter of person A has decided to treat something as usher, and everybody knows that it's not that he's claiming that it's usher, he's just, for him it's usher, he's not going to teach it, so then you don't have to have any worries. But here's the worry. If the first person has decided not to eat certain foods because he thinks they're usher, not because he decided to treat it like it's usher, but he thinks they're prohibited, this is the Ozarua we're still talking, and Shimon knows that it's permissible, right? So, Reuven says, I don't know if you're allowed to eat whatever it is on Pesach, right? Quinoa, let's say. I don't know if you're allowed to eat quinoa on Pesach. And Shimon is positive you're allowed to eat quinoa on Pesach. He thinks it's not a problem at all. He thinks Reuven told a mistake. So now, when Reuven goes to Shimon's house to eat, does he have to worry that Shimon just won't pay attention to it? Right? So, the truth is, now that I'm talking about this, examples that come up, but let's suppose that there's a way of preparing food on Shabbos, warming it up, that I am pretty sure is allowed. Right, but so-and-so thinks it's actually cooking on Shabbos. So according to so-and-so, thinks it's cooking on Shabbos, he thinks that this food shouldn't be eaten, let's say, because he thinks that I'm doing it on purpose and whatever it is, and therefore it should be. That's maybe a closer example. So do we say that since I'm so certain that it's permissible, and I'm so certain that Reuven is wrong, and he's just gotten halacha wrong, and if he knew what I knew, or if I could only sit down and learn the sugya with me, I would convince him. Do we have to worry that maybe I, who think that it's mutter, am going to give him the food and not worry about it? Because after all, right, you know what, I'm sorry. Now that we're talking, galat is the easiest example. Right? I know a guy who's decided that any meat that's not galat kosher is not kosher. Right? And I know that non-galat meat is kosher. I'm certain of it. I think he's just being crazy about it. And therefore, I'll serve him non-galat meat and I won't tell him. Right? So does that guy who only eats galat, does he have to worry about that? So the Ozarua says maybe you have to worry about that, and because maybe he has the responsibility for his halachic practice to be suspicious of me because I don't think they see it that way, and maybe I qualify as what's called in the Gemara chashad al adavar. Chashad al adavar is somebody who is known to violate somebody, or we suspect him of violating it, and since that person is not as careful about this halachic area as he should be, then we in halacha say he can't be a judge on such issues, he can't give testimony about some issues, so that's one possibility, he's a chashad, therefore we can't trust him. Or possibly it's still true that we know that Jews wouldn't do this to each other, and if I know that so-and-so Jew who's coming to my house has this standard and this stringency, even if I think he's completely wrong, my respect for my fellow Jews' halachic practice will make sure that I don't, that I will not feed him the wrong stuff. And the Ozarua suggests that this might be related to a machloket in the Gemara between Rav and Shmuel about whether when Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel had disagreed about halachic issues, and the majority was Beit Hillel, did Beit Shammai act upon their views, or did they not, and they just went along with Beit Hillel? And the conclusion of that sugya, of that discussion, seems to be that Beit Shammai followed their practice. They had their own separate practice, and Beit Hillel followed their practice. And then the Gemara says, but we know that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai would socialize with each other, they would eat together, they would get married to each other, and that was because they knew that if anything came up that the other side thought was prohibited, the other side would tell them. So it's really a model of, well, it's a model of if people have split up in their practice, which is not always the best idea, is always not always a great thing for the Jewish people, but it's a model of if they did disagree so much about practice, they nonetheless were able to respect each other's practice, to look out for each other in terms of what their practice was, and to accommodate each other's practice. So that's the end of the Or Zeruah. It seems like, says Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, says the Binyan Sion, it seems like that you're not allowed to give somebody else something that for their perspective is also is prohibited, because that's the Beit Shammai Hillel case. Beit Shammai Hillel were allowed to rely on each other because they knew that the other one wouldn't give them something that was prohibited. Except that's Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. He's not sure that you have to. And this is another example, I've been collecting a little bit, of Achronim who are comfortable asking questions on Rishonim and not just accepting what they say and maybe thinking that it's different. Here he says, because it could be in the Behil Beit Shammai situation, they would always make sure to ask each other. They would say to them, listen, I hold this way. Could you do me a favor? Let me know if this issue comes up in Halacha. That's when you can certainly trust. Because the idea that we would think that Jews would purposely trip each other up when they know that the other person has a halakhic perspective, that we don't suspect Jews of doing. There's a pasuk in Tanakh, right? Yisrael lo yidaber chazav. We don't trick each other, we don't fool each other, we don't lie to each other, and things like that. But that doesn't prove that if the Beit Hillel had not asked, would they have been able to rely on the fact that Beit Shammai would have been aware of it, or vice versa? Meaning, the question then becomes, if I don't mention it to the person, can I rely on the fact that he just knows my halachic positions, and therefore that he will make sure not to accommodate them? Because maybe, right, you come to my house, I go to somebody's house, let's say, and let's say I think that X is usher, whatever it might be, and they have always done it. Maybe they don't even know that I care about that. They can be so certain that the world operates the way they're used to the world operating, and they just do what they do, and they expect everybody follows them. So it's a little, perhaps, oblivious to such people, but it is still possibly true to what happens. Yaakov Ettlinger says, the proof of the Or Zeruah only goes so far as, right, if somebody invites me for, you know, for whatever, and I say, okay, but I need you to understand that I don't X and Y, I find X and Y and Z prohibited, they would say, fine, we're happy to accommodate you, then I don't have to worry about it. But whether or not I can just assume that the person knows, that's a different kind of a question. Now, I'll note that he's already gotten into the question of whether the person who's coming over can assume that the person, that the host, is going to be aware of it, which is a slightly different question than the question raised at the beginning, because the question raised at the beginning was, am I allowed to sort of knowingly slip it in, even if they didn't ask me? Can I just serve them something that I think of as heter? So for that, the Rezor would seem to have shown directly that we wouldn't, because if the guy asked me specifically, but Rav Yaakov Ettlinger is sort of saying, well, if he didn't ask me, even if I know that he holds his usher, maybe then I'm allowed to do it. Right? If he asked me, the problem isn't only the halakhic issue of that he thinks it's prohibited, the problem is that I'm then violating the trust that he created with me by specifically asking me about that issue. That, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger says, would be what the Beit Hillel Beit Shammai story showed, that if somebody explicitly said something to you about it, then we don't have to suspect that you would be so disgusting as to say, oh, fine, I'm happy to accommodate you, and then trick him. But let's say he comes over, he never mentions it, you know that he holds this way, but you give it to him anyway. So then he says, he thinks that there's a Gemara in Kulin, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger says, he thinks there's a Gemara in Kulin and Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, which talks about this issue. It's a strange kind of a story, because there's a debate there about, it's a milk meat and milk story, but it's about fish that were cooked in a fleshig pot, and whether or not you're allowed to eat them with like a milchic food. So the fish that was cooked in the pot, so the pot didn't have any actual meat in it, but it's a pot that is a fleshig pot. It absorbed meat tam, the taste of meat. So the taste is going from the meat into the pot, and now from the pot into the fish. And the question is, that fish, which now has sort of two-step removed tam, can I eat it with milchix? So Rav thought you could not. Rav thought you needed one more step removed before you'd be allowed to sort of mix them, as it were. And Shmuel thought you could. And they have a story there, Rabbi Elazar goes to, Rabbi Elazar was a student of Rav's, goes to Shmuel, and Shmuel brings him these kinds of fish that were cooked in this way, and Shmuel ate it pikutach, and he gives them to Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar doesn't eat it. So Shmuel says, your Rabbi Rav ate it, so how come you're not eating it? So Rabbi Elazar goes to Rav and says, did you change your mind? And Rav said, gives a strange answer of, no, for sure not. There's no way that Shmuel would have given me such a food. And Rashi there says, lo yudvarei me'olam, that it never happened. So it's strange, though, because Shmuel said it did happen. So you got to try to explain the story. So we will get to the explanation in a minute. But as we do, it will be an example. We're not learning that sugya in Chulin today. But it will be. This is going to be an example of when you're confronted with a problematic text, the way one answers such texts can shape one's halachic views. And the question will be, to what extent are you willing to rely on your own answers to then build off of and say, yes, that's the answer. That's a question we saw before. We saw Rav Moshe Feinstein talking about the reward for non-Jews, and we saw there that he became so certain of some answers that shaped his reading of lots of other texts. So that question of how much we trust our answers here, it's not going to be as obvious as a problematic reading necessarily, but it's going to be interesting to watch Yaakov and to become sure of something and then build off of that. So the first way to read the story that he offers is, and he's not going to stay here, but the first way he reads the story is maybe this is exactly the debate that we are talking about. Shmuel held that since he holds that it's mutter, he holds this food can be eaten in this way. The fish can be eaten with the milk sort of preparation, like the sort of like a cottage cheese kind of a thing or a sour cream kind of a thing, and you can eat it with this fish because they're not really fleshig. So he held, I can give it to Rav as well. Whereas Rav thought you couldn't do that, and therefore Rav assumed that it was prohibited, and that's how the story happened. I mean, the reason that Rav ate it was because he didn't realize it was the kind of fish that he wouldn't eat with kutach, but that's a hard way to read the story, because, as he's going to note later on, I'm just going to mention it now, because then what's Shmuel saying, well, Rav ate it to Rabbi Elazar, Rav only ate it because he didn't know that Shmuel was feeding it to him. So that would be a problematic story. That would be a problematic part of the story. And then what did Rav mean by it never happened? Yeah, apparently it did happen. That's a hard way to read it. So instead he says, I also noticed a Ritva. The Ritva in Sukkah is commenting on another story that's sort of related. In that story, there's a debate about when you have decorations of the sukkah that sort of hang down too far. So they hang down, you know, four tefachim. So the question of decoration of the sukkah and how much they're allowed to hang down, how much they're not allowed to hang down, that's a question of its own. And these were hanging down farthest. Rav Nachman thought they were okay even so. And Rav Chisda, Rav Huna felt that it wasn't allowed, that passels the sukkah, meaning it means that if you sit under it, you're sitting under the decorations, not under the sukkah, and that's a problem. So one time, Rav Chisda and Rav Bar Rav Huna, who held that it passels the sukkah, it invalidates the sukkah, they were going to speak to the Reish Galuta about something. Reish Galuta was the head of the Jewish community in Bavel, and he was a powerful political figure, and they had to go speak to him about something, and they stayed with Rav Nachman, their friend Rav Nachman, and they stayed in a sukkah where this was exactly true. You had the decorations hanging down so far, and he says to them, and they didn't say anything. So, and they didn't comment on it. They didn't say, you know, we don't like this. This is a problematic sukkah. Could you change it? Could you help us out? And he said to them, you don't, you've changed your mind? You think that such a sukkah is kosher? Again, these are all strange stories because you wonder why Rav Nachman was doing it. That's sort of related to the issue that Rav Yaakov Etner is raising. To what extent, as we follow our halachic practice, should we be trying to accommodate others? It doesn't seem like Rav Nachman was trying. So he said, but when he sees them just saying nothing about it, he says, you change your minds? And they said, no. They said, we are shluchei mitzvah. We are here on a mitzvah purpose. And there is a discussion in the Gemara, and the Psak Halacha is, that people who are on a mitzvah mission, they do not have to. They're not required to sit in a sukkah, and therefore we're putzer from a sukkah. So they said, yeah, we knew we were sitting in a sukkah that we hold as invalid. We just didn't need to make a fuss about it, because we don't have to sit in a sukkah. Another remarkable example of how we expect and assume we should interact with our fellow Jews. Meaning, whatever Rav Nachman, we're going to get back to Rav Nachman in a little bit, but Rav Nachman was thinking, by putting them in this sukkah, they say nothing about it. You could easily imagine them saying, you know, Rav Nachman, you know that we hold this as an invalid sukkah. So even though they're putter, they're still staying with him. So apparently they had enough time to be able to sit in a sukkah, to live in a sukkah. So even if they're not obligated to, they wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, and they come to their friend Rav Nachman, and he puts them in a sukkah that's invalid by their opinion. So it's kind of an odd thing, and they don't say anything. So the idea of civility, of people getting along, and learning to forego saying certain things in certain situations, I think that's something that is not the topic at all, and yet comes out of the discussion. In any case, the Ritva on that discussion says that there were some people who tried to read this story as exactly answering Yaakov Ellinger's question, that is proof. Because Rav Nachman, by the way, until he asked them the question, apparently they'd been in the sukkah for a while, he says, did you change your mind? Until then, he apparently thought that he was putting them in a sukkah that was invalid. So what was he doing? So some people wanted to say that it shows there's no lifnei iver. You're allowed to give things that you think are permissible to others. You're allowed to give them, and it's not lifnei iver. So if it was a sukkah, and I knew that they hold this as an invalid sukkah, I could put them in it, and it's not a problem. That would be the exact answer of Yaakov Ellinger's question. Rav Ritva would be holding. This would be, these people are holding, that this story shows that you're allowed to do that. But the Ritva himself says, no, I think here it's different. And it's different because here it's obvious. What does that mean? It's obvious. I mean, it's clear that the decorations are hanging down and they're in a place where these guys held that it was prohibited. So he brought them into that sukkah and he thought if they care about it, they'll say something about it. Now that Ritva is putting on who do we place the burden of speaking up. I think it's an interesting question of halachic civility. So I think the actions of Nachman here are open to continuing question, but it's not really our topic, so we're going to gloss over it. That's the answer of a gift. So in a case where it's clear and it's obvious to the other person that I'm doing something according to my halakhic view, not according to their halakhic view, then that's okay. Because if he doesn't think that it's okay, he won't eat. He can say something, he can this. But where it would not be clear, right, so that's not clear at all that you would lead somebody into sin, and then he mentioned the story with Rav and Shmuel and the fish that Rav would have held was usher, and he said that's how his teacher has. He has, in other words, the Ritva is holding the other way from the Or Zarua that you're clearly not allowed to do it. Unless it's clear to the person who's eating it, then you're allowed to do it. But that doesn't yet solve the problem, because Shmuel seems to have given Rav the food without Rav recognizing it, right? And so how can you explain Shmuel? And Rav Nachman seems to have brought them into the sukkah, right, and had them sleep there, and only in the morning did he say to them, you know, you guys don't mind this? Right? But he seems to have thought that along the way, he was allowed to do it and leave it up to them. So why would that be? So Yaakov Ellinger suggests that he thinks that when Rav Nachman brought them to the sukkah, it was at night, and that you could argue it was at night, and therefore they didn't know that there were decorations hanging down. It was dark, and they didn't see anything, and they couldn't see how far they were from the schach. And when it says that he let them sleep there, that he had them sleep there, that would suggest that it means that you're allowed to. That if you hold something's mutter, you're allowed to have somebody else do it, even though they think that it's usser. And you don't have to worry about it. And then in the morning, when he asked them the question, it's because when he saw them in the morning in the daylight eating breakfast in the sukkah and acting as if it's all fine, so then he was surprised. And that's why he asked him. That's a possibility. But it's still a problem because you still got that story with Shmuel, right? And how could Shmuel have done it? Not only that, we also have a problem because we generally think that we paskin like Rav in the case of Isurim, which means with those fish that we're going to rule that they're prohibited. If that's true, then how could Rav Nachman paskin another way? Meaning, if we're holding that Rav says, so because Rav in that story says first, he says two things. He thinks the fish is prohibited, and he also says, and Shmuel would never feed it to me. That means that Rav seems to hold that you're not allowed to give somebody food that they think is prohibited, even if you think it is. So even if you hold that Shmuel thought you were allowed to, and that Rav Nachman thought you were allowed to, then you're going to have a problem because Rav holds you not, and we pass it like Rav against Shmuel, and Rav Nachman's a few generations later, so how could Rav Nachman go against Rav and give food or give living in a sukkah that's prohibited to the people that he's talking to? They think it's prohibited. How could he have done that? So Rav Yaakov Ellinger just says, but you know what? That Rav story is still always very strange, right? Because if Rav knew that the fish had been cooked in a meat pot and then he ate them, then why is he saying later on, oh, Shmuel would never do such a thing? He knew about it. And if he didn't know about it, right, then how could it be that Rav Shmuel would then say to Rabbi Elazar, your Rebbe ate it, You're able to eat it because he didn't know about it, right? When Shmuel offers that fish to the Rebbe Elazar in the story, and Rebbe Elazar declined, and he says, your Rebbe ate it, why wouldn't you eat it? Then what's going on? Rebbe Yaakov then says, it doesn't make any sense, because if Rav didn't know, then it's no proof of anything. So then he says, and this is, I think, an important comment here, he says, in my Kiddushim to Sukkah, in my writings on Sukkah, because Yaakov Ettlinger wrote the Aruch Laner, in addition to the Binyan Sion. So in his book on Sukkah, he says, I've got a couple of answers there. But now, I think the best answer is, that this is the way to read that Gemara. Now, even before we get to his reading, and it's a fine reading, I just want to point out that once we know that people come up with different answers at different times in their lives, the question of how much credence we give to an answer that comes to us in a particular time. So I think that's an interesting question. And Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger is going to rule this way, lahalacha, based on this, on his understanding, on his assumptions about this issue. So I think these are interesting things to think about. So he says, if you look earlier in the Gemara in Chulin that talks about this question of the fish that has been cooked in a meat pot. So earlier on, Rav spoke about basar sheni talim min ha'ayin, that if there's food, there's meat, that you didn't watch. So this is all a question of, do we have to assume that if a non-Jew is in the proximity to meat of ours, we have to worry that they might switch it? It comes up in several halachic areas, but one of them is meat. Do we have to worry that for some reason they wanted our meat, not they wanted to steal our meat, but they needed meat for some reason, and they switched our meat with their meat, right? They had, a possibility would be they know we're coming back in 5 days, and on day three, they have a guy come over for barbecue, and they don't know what to do about it. They're all upset because, they don't have any barbecue ready, so they take our meat, they barbecue it, and on day four they go out and they buy other meat, non-kosher meat, and they put it where our meat was. So Rav held that. Rav held basar shita, and that's why we talk about double seals, because that's why meat often, when you buy it, comes with a double seal, because you want to make sure that even if it's gone, if it's been handled by people in between, that we don't have to worry that they switch the meat, because they won't go. We don't think they'll go through double seals. They don't go all to all that trouble. So I'm sorry, I realize I'm taking you through a whole sugya. That's not really the relevant sugya. The point was only that Rav Yaakov Ettlinger was saying from that story, the story talks about the idea of sometimes you don't know of an opinion of Rav because he says it directly. You only know an opinion of Rav because you heard something and you're applying it somewhere else. And that's how he uses to explain the story, because he ends up explaining the story as being that maybe Rav held that when we say dagim fish that was cooked in a meat pot, you can't eat them with milk. That's only because Rav assumed that even though it was twice removed taste, but it would be noticeable taste. And that Shmuel held, and that Rav ended up holding, that if there was no noticeable taste, now I don't think we pass in this way, so even though we hold this way about Naparnat, I don't think we pass it in terms of taste, but Rav Yaakov Ettlinger is understanding the Gemara to be that maybe it's only where there's noticeable taste. So when Shmuel served Rav, Dagim Shalu Bekara, when Shmuel Rav those fish, they were cooked in a meat pot, it's because he had checked them first, he knew they had no taste of meat. And so when Rav ate it, he didn't notice anything, and it wasn't us according to Rav, because Rav agreed that if there's no taste of fish, meaning Shmuel holds it, even if there is a taste of fish, you don't have to worry about it because it's so removed. Rav holds, no, if there's actually a taste of fish, then you have to worry about it. And Rabbi Lazar came over to Shmuel's house, he didn't know that detail of Rav's perspective, and therefore, and he saw that this had been fish cooked in a meat pot, and therefore he wasn't willing to eat it. And Shmuel says, no, Rav ate it. And when he went to Rav and says to Rav, you ate fish that was cooked in a meat pot? Rav says, no. There's no way that Shmuel would give me fish that had a taste of meat in it. If it was cooked in a meat pot, it must have been fish that Shmuel knew didn't have meat in it. So that story isn't so important for us. It's just that it lets us get that story out of the question of whether you're allowed to give people things that they think are prohibited, because it ends up that Shmuel never gave something to Rav that he knew Rav thought was prohibited. He gave something to Rav that he knew Rav thought was okay, but that Rabbi Elazar didn't know, and that's where that story goes wrong. So that's the reading of that story. It takes us away from our issue, because so coming back to our issue, the Yaakov Ettlinger concludes, he says, therefore he thinks the halacha lamaisa, that from these stories of Rav and Nachman, we can't prove that there's anybody who holds that it's okay to just give something, an item or a food or a practice that they think is prohibited. And just because you know that it's mutter, And even if it were to be true from those stories that Shmuel or Rav Nachman held that way, they still, in the, we paskin in halacha, and we have a debate about issues of isur v'heter, of what's prohibited and allowed, not about monetary issues, we follow Rav, not Shmuel. So even if you were going to argue that Rav Yaakov, then you got the story is wrong in the Gemara, and that in fact Rav Shmuel and Rav Nachman held, you were allowed to do this, you're allowed to give items that others think of as prohibited, you're allowed to give to them because you know or are confident that it's permissible, we wouldn't follow them anyway. And therefore he thinks he shouldn't do it. And you're not allowed to do it, and there's no way to allow it. Even if the person doing it thinks it's complete heter gomor, it's clear and obvious, right? So, you know, somebody comes to my house on Pesach and they've decided that gebrocht is not allowed. And I know that there's no source whatsoever for gebrocht. It's a late custom and it's a this and a that, and I think that it's the craziest thing in the world. And I'm so sure that if I've got something that's gebrocht, I think, you know what, it doesn't matter. They're just being silly. So Rav Yaakov says, nope, it's not true. He, no matter how confident I am in my halachic judgment, he thinks there is no source that allows for us to give that person, him or her, something they think of as prohibited. But it's possible that if it's really visible and it's really clear, then maybe then I am allowed to. Maybe then, if like that would be if you read the story of Rav Nachman in the sukkah as being, as the Ritva had, that he put them in a sukkah because they could clearly see the decorations hanging down, and that would be up to them to decide what to do about it. So it's possible you could argue that way, although he thinks that even that's quite likely. So for example, you know, I serve knedel in the soup to people who don't eat gebrocht on Pesach. It's matzah meal, and it's in the soup, so they know that it's gebrocht. So Rav Yaakov thinks, nonetheless, he thinks it's quite plausible that you'd have to let them know, and therefore it would also mean that, let's say, I'm the person who thinks that it's prohibited, and I go to somebody who thinks that it's mutter, even though that person is a great Rav, and I should probably be able to rely that he wouldn't give me stuff that I think of as prohibited, he thinks that it's best for me to ask the question, as he thought Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai always ask the question of each other, not to rely on it. So on the one hand, I'm not allowed to give it to somebody else if I know that they think of it as prohibited. On the other hand, if I'm the one who thinks it's prohibited, I should ask the question beforehand. And in all of this, we should make sure to help other Jews follow the religion and keep Torah and Halacha the way they think is appropriate, regardless of what we happen to think about their perspectives. And that is the responsibility for the 19th of Cheshvan. Rav Yaakov Endlich, you're telling us how we should treat other Jews in terms of making sure to respect and help them keep to their practices. Have a great day.